Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, where we discuss everything in the Hooniverse. Join us each week as we bring you news, rumor, and recap. And now your hosts, Jay Witten. You win this one, Internets! And Melissa Mazza.
We were playing fast and loose with the term.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing episodes that have already aired, as well as news that's public knowledge. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Have something you want to say? You can email us at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @GallifreyRadio or leave a comment on each episode at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. This week we recap Series 5 and 6 and speculate on what's coming for Series 7.
Hello and welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio. We are just a couple of days away from the premiere of Series 7 of Doctor Who.
Woo!
So we are getting very excited. I'm Melissa, here today as always with Jay. Jay, how are you?
I'm doing good. Counting down the days.
So today we have, you know, a lot to talk about. We're going to recap the last two series, as well as there's just been a ton of news and new content coming out about the show just to get us really souped up for the premiere. So let's just jump right into it. You just showed me some posters online. So what do you think of they? Let me see how many there are. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 posters.
Yes, they're each for each of the episodes coming up in Series 7. You've got Asylum of the Daleks, Dinosaurs on the Spaceship, A Town Called Mercy, Power of Three, and The Angels in Manhattan.
Yes. Yeah.
I think they look fantastic. I mean, they're really going high budget with these. It's absolutely fantastic.
And I literally you just showed these to me before we started recording. So I'll bet if we sat down and actually researched it, there's probably a ton of references in these, both to other, other works outside of the show, but also to other episodes or something, because there's a ton of detail here.
Yeah, it's, these things look fantastic. They've really gone high end. Obviously, the one that most people have seen now is going to be the Asylum of the Dalek poster.
Yeah, I like this one. It reminds me of GoldenEye, like you're looking down the barrel of a gun, but of course it's not a gun. It's a Dalek's eye stalk.
The eye stalk, yes.
Yeah. So, very cool. This is like a badass kind of scary picture.
Yeah, and then next we have the dinosaurs on the spaceship. So, I mean, we basically just have the Doctor riding a Triceratops. I mean, you can't go wrong with this.
It's a very fun picture. I can't wait to see this episode.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is something they've been wanting to do for a long time. It just hasn't really come about yet. So for them to have the opportunity to finally visualize this, it's going to be fantastic. It really is. It's going to be loads of fun.
Yeah. And then there's A Town Called Mercy, which is done old western style. It looks like a Clint Eastwood poster. Do you watch the show Community? This reminds me of a joke from Community. No. Well, anyway. but for some reason, because of that, it's making me think that this is like a funny episode, even though nothing about this poster suggests.
Oh, it does have its humor. I mean, we've seen in the trailer that there's, you know, at one point, Amy is holding a gun and accidentally fires it. And someone's like, okay, anyone that isn't an American, drop your weapons. And then Amy goes to drop the gun and it goes off again. She's like, well, I didn't mean to do that one. So there's going to be some humor in this one. It looks like it's going to be fun, but it also, this poster does have a very serious take on it. And you're right. I mean, it looks like the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. And how about The Power of Three? This one's very sci-fi.
Yeah.
The one I probably know the least about, the episode.
Yeah, same here. I mean, you don't really get anything from the title, thankfully. Yeah, I mean, I do want to have some surprises coming my way, you know. This kind of, it evokes almost like a Matrix feel to it. You know, it's got kind of feel. But, you know, there's really not anything. I mean, they're all holding black cubes with the number 3 on it. There's not really anything to
well, and there's 3 of them there, which I think, exactly. Is the power of 3. Are they talking about these 3? Are they going to be important somehow?
That was my initial thought when I first heard the title of this episode, was it was going to have something to do with the 3 of them.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking, too.
And then finally we come to the Angels Take Manhattan. This looks terrifying.
Yeah. I don't even know what to say about this. This just, it's terrifying.
I mean, obviously we'll put links to this in the show notes. But, you know, you've got the doctor covering his eyes like one of the weeping angels, except he's kind of holding his hand down, uncovering one eye.
Yeah.
And behind them you've got Amy and Rory both in, like, a prayerful stance looking at the skies, and they're both the same color as the angels. So I'm wondering if that's just a visual thing, if it's an artistic choice, or if that's foreshadowing the fate of the Ponds.
I suspect you may be onto something here, but I don't know. It's just making me more. It's when these 5 episodes are over, I'm gonna be like, what? That time passed so quickly. Like, and they're over already. But for right now, I cannot wait to see this episode and see what this poster is alluding to and what is gonna go on.
I know. This is one of the episodes that I'm most looking forward to and most dreading at the same time.
Yeah.
The little bits that I've seen from the trailers they've released looks very evocative of the same kind of terror that you get in Blink. You know, it's the same kind of sitting on the edge of your seat waiting for something to happen. You know, it's all about building that tension, and then when it finally releases, it's like a giant rubber band, you know?
Yeah.
So sure. I think that this one is going to be just amazing.
Yeah. So, moving on from posters, we've all now, okay, so when we are recording this right now, it has been the 3rd, I don't even know today's date, so, it's the 29th, so we've been watching the series The Pond Life, which is a web series online, and as of right now, we're up to day 3, or month 3. They're showing April, May, and June of the life in Amy and Rory's life, but so, you know, as soon as this podcast is out, though, it's going to be outdated information, and the other 2 episodes are going to come. Right. So, I think I just have to throw that out there before we say anything.
Yeah. This has been fun. They're a minute long videos, and they're just quick little things, and they're hilarious, and it's just a little bit of something to get you through this week.
Yeah. And when I heard, I heard that they were mini episodes. I'm thinking like 5-minute episodes, but less than a minute. Like, these are just like, it tantalizes you. It's
exactly.
Not satisfying at all.
I have to say that this was very carefully crafted to, you know, give you just enough to like, and leave you waiting, you know. So I think that, I think it was brilliant on their part. I hate it because I want more. You know, and waiting every day, you're just like waiting, is it live yet? Is it on there? Can I see it yet? Dang it. Yeah.
Well, I was watching an interview. There was Asylum of the Daleks premiere in the UK, I want to say, is where they were. But they were interviewing the stars of the show. The way that they were talking, it sounded like they had thought that this was going to be an episode or part of an episode. So I was hoping that there was like a lot of content that they had filmed and that this was going to like, and so like, let's talk about that. Cause like, I actually, in these 3 little webisodes, there is a lot of, there are some fast clips going through there, and you can see what looks like clips from Dinosaur's Spaceship, maybe some of the other shows. So, some of the other episodes. So so the first one was April. Right.
That was the doctor just calling to check in on them, leaving them a voicemail, talking about the things that he had been doing since he saw them last. And, you know, there's nothing really leading up to Series 7 in this one that we can see. You know, he's gotten into a scrape with the Santarans. He's come across, I can't even remember the woman's name. He says it so quick.
Badahari.
Okay, yes. Sorry. He's just leaving a voicemail for him.
Yes. Yeah. The thing about Mata Hari, he says, what an interesting woman. There's a visual joke there that the thing that he's holding, like,
with
rises.
The fork, yes.
In front of, yeah. So, again, a lot packed into a little episode here. double entendres and stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, again, just tantalizing because there was nothing, you know, no new information or anything. This is just him getting into these silly antics. He laid down some backing vocals. He's like a rapper.
Yeah, I forgot about that part.
And then we go to May, which was...
This is the bedroom scene.
Yeah, the bedroom.
Yeah, he bursts in on him sleeping, and, you know, Rory freaks out on him, goes, you know, we have rules about the bedroom. And the doctor's just obviously in a state of panic, flipping out, saying, you know, the world's in danger, we need to go. And then he realizes, and he's like, and you know nothing about it. I'm at the wrong time. Dang it. You know, he goes to leave, and they're like, well, is there something we should know about? Is there anything? And he's like, no, the future's great. The future's fine. You can kind of see him, like, thinking. And that's when we get the most information we've gotten so far. It's real quick. I mean, not even, like, a second long shot of anything, but just real quick flashes of parts of the upcoming episodes.
Yes. I saw a lot of spaceships and, like, kind of, like, space battles, things getting blown up, dinosaurs, the doctor running from something. Yeah. and the word warning blinking, somewhere, like, yeah, I'm trying to, like, slow it down and see frame by frame.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really anything that's any solid clue as to what we've got coming, but it's very interesting seeing it. I love the end, though, when, you know, when he goes to leave, he's like, no, everything's great, you know, go back to sleep. And he gets in the TARDIS, and you hear it leaving, and Amy and Rory are both laying in the bed, staring at the ceiling, and Rory's like, I really hate when he does that.
Which brings us to June, which was today, the Ood on the Loo, another Rory being understated, fabulous.
I know, Rory is great when he's just, he seems, you can tell it bothers him, but he remains completely unflustered, and that's what is brilliant about him.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like I was saying, I love the fact that, you know, anyone else, you walk in sitting on the toilet, and they're going to freak out, and you start yelling and screaming, and, you know, you walk in on an Ood, and it says, can I be of some assistance?
So, it's good to see the Ood again.
Yeah, I'm really glad that they're starting to make more of an appearance.
Yeah. So, I mean, unless you have something else to say about that, speaking of, you were saying that you watched with your children at the End of Time recently. Did you have any insights or anything that you wanted to mention today about that? Or?
I had watched it recently, and it just kind of caught me off guard again how much of a good farewell it was to David Tennant. I mean, the writing was, you know, it was on par with most everything else in that series.
Yeah.
You know, but the end is what really got me, was, you know, when the doctor is going to say his farewell, the situation resolved, and Wilf is in the box, and, you know, that's when the doctor sees him and starts getting upset because he knows what he's got to do. But, you know, when I first saw the series, I knew that this was the end of David Tennant. I knew he was going to regenerate. And so once I saw Wilf in the box, I'm like, okay, that's how it is. He's going to save Wilf and this, that, and the other. And I was, you know, already moving on from that. When I watched it this time, I stopped and actually paid attention to what was going on as it was happening. And, you know, the doctor is really losing it. And had I not known anything ahead of time, I would have seriously thought that he was not going to save Wilf. I mean, he says at times, you know, Wilf says, no, just leave me, you know, you're too important, just leave me in here. And the doctor's like, that's right, I'm too important. I can't sacrifice myself for you. You know, I've done so much good, and I could do so much more. And, you know, he's livid at this point. And he's being a real dick. And it was just... It was interesting because I didn't see that the first time because I was prepared for him to sacrifice himself. But going in and watching it again, you really see that, you know, he is pissed off about it. He doesn't want to die. And then finally when, you know, he throws a bunch of stuff off the table and stops and, you know, realizes what he's become. He's turning into the, you know, Time Lord Victorious again. And that's when he climbs into the box to let Wilf out.
Right.
Yeah. And just watching that again, you know, there's so much you can get out of these shows, even if you go over it again. You know, and then he goes and sees everyone before he regenerates again. And I'd forgotten that that was actually in this episode when he stopped to see the granddaughter of the school teacher from Human Nature and Family of Blood, the woman that, you know, John Smith fell in love with.
Yeah, Joan Redfern or something.
Yes. Yeah, he...
Really? I don't remember this. So he saw her granddaughter? Is that what she said?
Yeah, her granddaughter wrote a book about her relationship with the doctor, about Joan's relationship with the doctor. And, you know, he stops and you see her talking to someone else saying, no, this really happened, you know, explaining the situation to somebody and handing them the book. And then you see a book handed to her and she's like, who do I make it out to? And you hear David Tennant say, the doctor. She's like, oh, really? That's what he used to call himself. And there's this moment of recognition where she's like, oh my God, this is the guy. And then they turn the camera on David Tennant. And the only thing he says is, was she happy? In the end, was she happy? And you see that, you know, while he's not John Smith anymore, while he's not that same person, there's still that connection there for him. He still feels for Joan. And it was just, it was a really powerful moment for me, having been through all of it and seeing it again.
Yeah, I remember that now. This whole sequence where he visits everyone is just heart-wrenching. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Like, it really is like he was dying, because we're going to talk about the 11th Doctor today. Like, he doesn't talk – like, all these people were, like, the past. Like, we haven't revisited any of these people that he's visited. Like, it was so final in the End of Time where he gets closure with all of them, you know?
Yeah. And another thing that I saw that was kind of interesting to me, having been through – Torchwood, was seeing Jack Harkness again at the bar. And
he fixes him up, right?
Sorry, it's coughing. Didn't want to do that in your ear. You see Jack Harkness sitting at the bar, and all of a sudden he's handed a note from the bartender, and he says, that's from that guy over there. You know, he looks up and sees the doctor. Hmm. You know, and he hooks him up with Alonzo, with Midshipman Frame.
Yes.
But it was just seeing him sitting at the bar there drinking. That is supposed to come after Children of Earth. And so if you put that in context of what Jack has just been through, what he has just done, and seeing the doctor again, you know, I don't know, just the dynamic of that just really was interesting to me.
That makes a ton of sense. I love that, yeah. And also, a more frivolous thing, Alonzo, I remember when he says, oh, I've always wanted to say this, Alonzo, and then... But because I've been, like, rewatching it for this podcast, he does say when he first regenerates, wouldn't it be great if one day I get to say Alonzo,
yeah.
Or whatever. So, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but
back to Jack Harkness.
Well, I just think that episode is worth rewatching. My son wanted to see when 10 regenerated. Yeah, he wanted to see the origin of Matt Smith's Doctor, and as much as I did not want to suffer through that again, I sat down and watched it, and it really is worth watching again. You know, there's so much in that last few minutes that just, you know, sums up the past three series perfectly. You know,
what did your son have to say about it?
Oh, he didn't say much. He's not to the point where he's picking it apart yet. He's just enjoying the ride. So,
right. Nice to be there.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple news stories that came out. One is that Matt Smith I don't know if he actually knows anything or if he's just trying to feed to the speculation right now. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about the 50th anniversary
Yeah.
And what they're going to be doing. And he said, this is a quote from him, it says, "It won't just be a televised event. I think it will be a live event. The way it's transmitted on TV will hopefully be an innovative thing, something different." So, you know, does he actually know something, or is it just, you know, him trying to mess with people, or, you know, inject his own wishes into it? I don't know. Everyone that can say anything about it is staying very tight-lipped about it. So I don't know if this means anything, or if it's just, you know, hey, wouldn't this be cool if, you know.
Well, apparently Caroline Skinner just said something about having something live, too. Just recently said that the production team have huge ideas for live events. So, I mean, who knows? Because I found another quote by Matt Smith that said, like, people will take anything and run with it. They said there have been some rumors that there might be some old school doctors. I'm sorry, old school monsters on Doctor Who next year. And Matt said, yeah, I suppose there are, but then I don't want to give anything away, really, of what might or might not be coming up, because perhaps there are some classic monsters coming back. There's one I'm very intrigued by, which we haven't seen for quite some time. So, and then he goes, like, they ask him a question, and he's like, maybe we might. So he's like, there's nothing, you know, nothing definite or whatever. But now everyone's saying, like, everyone's trying to guess what monsters he's talking about are coming back.
Yeah. I think at this point, everyone in the show is just like, hey, let's wear green socks today and see what kind of theories they can come up with on that one. You know, at this point, everyone is just clamoring for any kind of new information. So I think they're just having fun with it.
Yeah.
Well, on a sadder note, Karen Gillan said that she will never return to Doctor Who. She's got a strict no cameo rule in this. The quote I've got from her here is, she said, "I decided there'd be no cameo returns after I leave. I want the impact of the end of the Pond era to remain strong. I don't want to spoil it by coming back a few episodes later to say hello." And I really admire that. Because, you know, with Rose getting ripped away and stuck in a different dimension, that was heart-wrenching. I mean, that was brutal. And then to have her show up two series later, and all of a sudden she and the Doctor get to be together, it's like, oh, okay. You know, when I go back and watch it now, it's like, yeah, that sucks, but she's going to be back within 2 years anyway. So it's, yeah. I like that that Karen Gillan is standing up and saying, no, I want this to stand out. I want this to be memorable.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can see that as an actor, but also for Doctor Who, I don't know if that really fits. Like, kudos to her for that, and, like, I can't actually judge until I see the episodes, and you know, my opinion could completely change. I could say, oh, she's absolutely right. But, like, I really liked when Billy Piper made cameos and stuff. Like, this is the kind of show where you could do that, and I don't like now that they're saying, like, oh, well, we could have 10th Doctor back, but Billy Piper wouldn't make a cameo. Well, like, you know, she's holding up everything for everyone. Like, what if they had this great idea and Karen Gillan said that she wouldn't do it, you know?
Well, I guess it kind of depends on the fashion in which they leave. You know, if Amy is, you know, killed off or effectively killed, then trying to convolute a way to have her come back would be kind of pointless. If it's just, you know, she decides to go home and then we never hear from her again. Yes, that is kind of cheap. That would kind of ruin it. But if there's a powerful way that she is leaving the show, if it's, you know, a definite way, then I like the fact that she wants to stick with it. And, I mean, at this point, she knows the ending of her character. So,
you know. Right. It all depends on what that ending is. And she knows it and we don't. So that is the bottom line.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did have one interesting thing happen to me that I wanted to share. I actually met a fellow Whovian at work a couple weeks ago. And the way that I met him was interesting because we were sitting in the break room and there were a few people in there. And it was eerily quiet. I mean, much more quiet than it usually is. And all of a sudden, I hear tapping. And it's, you know, a little four beat. And it just, you know, triggered in my head and automatically just reflex, really. I whistle the first three notes of the theme. You know, it just goes along. It fits. I don't know if that's what he was doing. It just fit, and so I did it. And as soon as I did that, his head whips up, and he looks around for who did it and sees me whistling. He looks at me and goes, "Bow tie?" I shake my head, and I'm like, "3D glasses. Fantastic." And I mean, that was it. And everyone else in the room was just kind of staring at us like, "What the heck just happened?"
But, I mean, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard. In three words, you just said so much.
Yeah. I mean, that was it was great. You know, that's the kind of way that Whovians can meet. And, you know, it's just such a fantastic community that, you know, something like that can happen. I mean, that made my whole day. The rest of the week, I was happy because something like that happened to me. It was just fantastic.
That is awesome. I never meet Whovians. I'm waiting. I wear my t-shirts.
Yeah, I do that too. That's actually, I've met some people, you know, was out ice skating and someone said something about my shirt, and at the grocery store someone will say something. And
you know what? I saw a guy with a shirt with a Dalek on it, and I did, yes. I was at work, and he was on a construction site, and I'm like, "Nice shirt." He's like, "What? Nice shirt." Like, we'll go back 5 minutes. "Oh, nice shirt." And that was my one meeting in the wild with someone else.
Yeah. All right, well, I say it's about time for us to start looking at these episodes so we don't wind up with another, you know, two-hour-long cast.
Yeah, don't tempt me.
It was very easy how that happened.
But as we said, but like these are, they're more like two or three episode story arcs, so it's not like you're talking episode by episode necessarily.
Right. Well, the Matt Smith era begins with the 11th Hour, where we first really meet the 11th Doctor, where we meet little Amelia Pond. You know, and then later on, the grown-up Amy Pond.
What are your thoughts on this episode?
We just went back and started rewatching this. This episode was really interesting. The dynamic between Amy and the Doctor was set up fairly early. I do have to say that I'm very disappointed in Matt Smith's portrayal when he's going through the all the different foods and everything leading up to fish fingers and custard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, at one point, Amelia feeds him bacon, and he spits it out. And I just... bothered me. It bothers me on a visceral level.
It bothers me. I was willing to suspend my disbelief about time travel and all this stuff, but like about someone not liking bacon.
How do you get there from here? I just don't... Hence the, you know, the alien portrayal of the Doctor now.
Your whole perception of him is based on that one.
Yeah, exactly. No, but, you know, we start to see how Matt Smith works as the Doctor. You know, he's very frantic in the way that he goes about things, you know, and he's playing stuff a lot closer to the chest than David Tennant did. You know, while David Tennant was figuring something out, he was talking the whole way through. Even if you didn't understand what the heck he was talking about, he was talking. You know, with Matt Smith, it's like, "I'm going to do a thing." You know, and then he's off and doing it, and you're like, "What's going on?" He's like, "Here, hold this for me." "No, answer my question." You know, he's very, very close to the chest on how he does stuff.
That's a good way to put it, and this episode definitely establishes it. Like, this is a good episode. Because it establishes exactly who the Doctor is, and you like him like from the start, like this and Amelia Pond, that little actress is so good, and you know her character right there. Like, she's unimpressed with obviously she's impressed, like, because she, you know, she falls in love with the Doctor as a 7 year old, like,
yeah.
You know, she's his groupie for life, but you know, she plays everything really cool, and I love the way that this little kid Amelia does it.
Yeah, and she's great. You know, there's this crazy nut job in her backyard with a big old blue box, and well, you know, I need to do something. I might as well feed him. You know, so and just the fact that she's not fazed. She's just like, okay, you know, a very capable young lady. So you know, she's going to grow up into to be someone decent.
Yeah.
You know, I did like how even in this, the first episode of the series, at the end, the Prisoner Zero makes reference to the Pandorica. So in the first episode, we're getting a glimpse into what the end of the series is going to bring.
And they, Prisoner Zero says silence will fall.
Mm-hmm.
They're still on the silence storyline. You know, this is carrying over now two series later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a definitely a different way of doing it than Russell Davies did. Yeah, I've heard the best description I've heard is that Russell Davies' tenure as showrunner was very akin to Buffy. You know, where it was a Monster of the Week show and you had a loose thread tying each season or series together. And then at the end, it all kind of came to a head. Whereas Stephen Moffat is going more along the lines of, say, like Lost, where every episode you're getting a new piece and then five different questions. You know, it's all building into one giant picture that, you know, hopefully at the end will all fit together real nicely.
Yes.
But, and then, so then we have Amy running off with the Doctor and leading us into the Beast Below. This episode really made me fall in love with Amy.
Yeah, this, again, if 11th Hour established the Doctor, the Beast Below establishes Amy. She figures it out. Like, you know, she's not just someone running off with the Doctor. Like, she's actually helping him. Like, she made the situation better, and she's making herself useful. And we see that that's, like, you know, because she has a good heart. And I think we could talk about that in the next episode, too. Like, this is kind of Amy. Like, she... That's, like, a very Doctor-like quality, that because she does find the good... Sorry, I dropped my mic. Because she does find the good, she, like, you know, she makes the situation better for everyone.
And that's the thing that got me about this, watching it again, was, you know, at the end, the Doctor is set on his course. He's like, this is a horrible choice. I have this choice or this choice. Either one is horrible. I'm going to pick the one that's, you know, the lesser of two evils. And he's set on that. He is going through the process of basically, you know, killing this thing, essentially. Mm-hmm. And Amy is the one who recognizes. Amy's the one that puts it together, not the Doctor. You know, she's able to look at it and say, this is the situation. I've got to stop him. You know, she's the one that actually is able to save the day. And that's why I like her so much, is because she really comes through and says, you know, I'm intelligent. I can figure stuff out regardless of who I'm with.
And she figured out the Doctor, because she's saying that the star whale is like the Doctor, and she already knows his character, like, and uses her knowledge of him, who she's known for one episode, to,
right,
you know, to solve this whole galactic crisis.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think this one, it didn't, the first time I watched it, it didn't stand out to me as a fantastic episode. It was just a stepping stone to the later season. But going back and watching it now, I can really appreciate how much it really did set up the characters and feed into what the bigger so-called episodes are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's all I really have to say about that episode, right?
Yeah.
I like the lady who says, I'm the bloody queen. She says that later, the Pandorica.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very, very posh. And yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so now we... Yeah.
So that takes us into Victory of the Daleks. We find war-torn, World War II era England with Winston Churchill and their new secret weapon.
Yes, their Ironsides, which turn out to be Daleks. The London Blitz, always a popular choice for this show to return to. Like,
right.
I feel that's, you know, that's obviously just such a, it's in their consciousness, the UK, so you always return to these cultural touchstones, but I feel like we get a lot of Blitz stuff on this show.
Yeah.
This again is an episode that shows, Amy's character. She's the one, the Doctor, again, being very alien in this incarnation. reincarnation. Can't really figure out. There's a scene where he's trying to. There's the android doctor who's just discovered that he's not really human or whatever, and he's dying. The doctor's trying to get him to like remember all these human things, but it's Amy who zeroes in on it and is able to do it. And again, she shows herself an asset. If without her, the doctor wouldn't have been able to do it because this guy saves the day.
Mm. Yeah. It was an interesting episode. It's it brought us the Skittle Daleks, but it was basically just the showing Amy's compassion and her intelligence that really set this episode apart.
Is this the first the introduction of Churchill?
Yes, yeah, this was the first one. He made a.
Right, he talks flash. About it like they've known each other, but then.
Right.
At
least in New Who, this is definitely the first time he showed up. He was in The Beast Below at the very end. They showed at the next time on Doctor Who kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They showed Winston Churchill, and you saw the shadow of the Dalek. And then that was it. So I guess technically that would be his first appearance, but yeah. But anyway, after that, we get the Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone.
Some more weeping angels. Something that, because of these episodes, we start to associate with Amy and Rory. Something that you said last week about watching all of River Song, her things in order, made me really start to think about that. And it's like Lost, like you said before, like the way that they're doing this now is at, like out of synchronized time, like which with the whole River Song storyline, like I think that was so brilliant because now you're able to really explore this time travel thing. But like there's something called chronologically Lost where you can watch Lost in order. Like, and I wish that there was a chronologically River Song so that I could watch all this in order, because she in Time of Angels mentions. That she's going to see the doctor when the Pandorica opens, and he says he's looking forward to it, and she says she remembers it well. So it's just I'm still not quite at, like, I wish I knew where we were in her time stream, because she says hi to Amy, like does she know who Amy is to her, like
Yeah, she knows who Amy is. This is right before the silence of the library. Or, well, not right before, but this is the last time we see River Song before she comes across Silence in the library. At least so far. Later on they might cram another couple in there or something, but as far as the timeline we understand it now is that this is the last time she sees the Doctor before Silence in the library and the Forest of the Dead.
Okay. Yeah. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and we were watching this one the other night, and there's a lot of things that River says that once you know that Amy is her mom, you're like, oh man, I can't believe she just said that. And it's there's a lot of stuff in there that makes a lot more sense once you once you know what's going on. And there's also something I noticed last night when I was watching it. When the Doctor and River leave Amy in the forest, she can't open her eyes, and the Doctor leaves her, they're real close in on Amy's face, and you hear the Doctor as he's leaving, and then he comes back and grabs her hand and tells her to remember, and he's basically going off about remembering. Mm-hmm. And it seems very, very out of place for what's going on. It's like, why are you taking the time to do this when you need to stop the angels and this and the other? If you look every time they see the Doctor, if you look kind of off to the side, you can see that he's wearing his jacket. The angel had grabbed his jacket and was still holding it before. This is the Doctor coming back from the future to tell her to remember, foreshadowing the Pandorica opens and the Big Bang.
Yes, oh my god, and I just watched this episode, so I know exactly what you're talking about, and I don't have to be like, oh, I have to see that later. You are absolutely right, and I didn't even notice that.
Because the angel gets a hold of the Doctor's jacket as he's running away, and so he doesn't have his jacket on through the rest of the episode. But if you look, you can see that he actually has it on in that one little bit. And it was
That little bit always seemed out of place because mm-hmm. I thought he was like precognizant somehow that like, you know, he knew what was going to happen in light of that. But you're absolutely right. Like, this is just the doctor from the future popping in.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, it's stuff like that. Now that I'm watching it over again and I know what's going on again, I can, you know, you pick up on so much more and it's really awesome. I mean, this episode, or these two episodes, kind of have always been a sore spot for me because of the way that they treat the angels. You know, there's so much that's inconsistent with what we learned about them in Blink.
Yeah, in Blink, they sent you to the past, this, they kill you.
Yeah, they break your neck. It's like, they kind of explained it a little bit in the fact that they need a voice. They can't have a voice of their own. So, you know, they kill them to take part of their brain and use it as their voice. You know,
very reminiscent of Silence in the Library.
Yes. Yeah, with the Vashna Narada taking over the suit.
Yeah. See, maybe that's what's off. Like, these episodes, Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone, something was off to me. Like, I feel like they had all the creepiest elements. Like, the whole thing with Angel Bob talking to him was brilliant.
Yes.
But, like, for some reason, it didn't click for me. Like, it didn't terrify me the way it should have. I don't know what was missing, but...
It was when he made Angel Bob say comfy chairs. That must have been it.
Did he say that?
Yeah. He said something about, we have comfy chairs. Then you hear Angel Bob on the wall. He's like, we have no need of comfy chairs. I made him say comfy chairs. It's, you know, the fact that Amy is able to basically trick them into thinking that she can see them. You know, it's like if it's part of their physiology, if it's something they really don't have a choice in, then do they think, she can see me, I must still be stone, and they don't even think about it to move, or it doesn't jive with the rest of it.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that the Angels Take Manhattan kind of solidifies a lot of that, where it says, okay, this is how it is, and this is how it was in this one. This is how you connect the two. Yeah, that's what I'm really hoping for in that episode.
Yeah. All I know about that episode, I got spoiled a little bit on it, but it from what I know, what I did get spoiled on, you actually might be, you might get your wish. Like, they might explain that.
Yay!
And by the way, just a side note, I'm still terrified of weeping angels. There's a church that I go to all the time that has literally two weeping angels above the door, like hands in the head, like crying angels.
I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't go to that part of the city anymore.
Like, I want to walk around, like, across the street.
Do you stare at the church the whole time, too?
Yeah. As long as I don't blink, I'm good.
Well, yeah, and then this, after this episode, there was that, the deleted scene that I told you about, where it starts off with Amy basically trying to seduce the doctor, which I guess later gets moved into her bedroom, you know, and him explaining why, you know, he needs companions and stuff, which I'm glad that they took it out. It was a good scene. But at the end, you know, Amy's like, oh, so, you know, she's trying to access the TARDIS files or something. And she's like, so I'd have to, you know, to say, you know, show me all previous TARDIS occupants. And the doctor's like, no, I said voice locked. I would have to say, show me all the, you know, and it's funny, but it's like, I don't see the doctor falling for that, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, I wonder if that's why the scene was deleted. Like, so, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, obviously we're talking about a deleted scene right after this episode, where they're in her bedroom night before she gets married. And I think that's part of it, like, where the doctor, his character just doesn't seem very believable. And also, I'm glad that they kind of went in a slightly different direction with Amy. Mm. Like, you know, she came on to him a little bit, which... you know, I guess psychologically makes sense. Like, she worshipped him from the time she was a little girl, so obviously, like, she's going to try, like, you know, now that she has her chance with him, she's going to, like, try her thing with him. But, like, there was enough of it already in this episode and in the next one with the Rory's bachelor party or whatever that we didn't need that, and I'm very glad that it was deleted, like, after some careful thought. Like, it showed her in a bad light, it showed him in a bad light.
Yeah. I mean, that's one thing that kind of bothers me about Stephen Moffat. I mean, I'm not going to go off on a Moffat hating spree here, but, you know, he does that a lot where, you know, he'll use something for a comedic element even though it's completely out of character. You know, like, there's the doctor being tricked by a simple thing. There's, you know, what is it? In one episode, I can't remember what. You know, River Song threatens the Daleks, and they beg for mercy. You know, it's
right.
It was funny, but a Dalek wouldn't beg for mercy. It doesn't matter who it's from. You know, there's in Let's Kill Hitler. You know, the whole thing with River trying to get the gun and the doctor keeping it away from her. And at one point, you know, he turns the fruit bowl around and she grabs a banana by mistake. Like River it's like she would realize there's no trigger on a banana. You know, and she holds it up to his face, and it's a funny visual, but it's completely out of character. And it's like, that stuff just bothers me. It's like, it is funny, yes, but it pulls me out of the moment.
I love that scene, though. It's, like, so well choreographed. Just so
it was. Don't get me wrong. I think it was great. It was just that one thing where she's like, you know, she's been holding the banana the whole time and doesn't realize, huh, this kind of feels like a fruit, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
But... Anyway, okay, I'm done. I'll love Moffat the rest of the night, I swear.
So, all right, so this brings us to... Okay, so Vampires of Venice and Amy's Choice are both kind of just, like, whatever episodes, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're standalone.
They're not bad episodes. I just mean they're not pushing the story.
Yeah, they're filler, basically.
Yeah.
I did like Amy's Choice, how you finally get the answer. If she had to choose between one or the other, who does she choose? And this is where you finally see the relationship between Amy and Rory solidify. You know that, okay, they love each other and they're going to be together. The doctor's not going to be a problem.
I actually teared up at that point when he realizes that she would have crashed the car either way or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that moment, like, you're right. Like, that's like, wow, like, now we actually see their relationship.
And their relationship stays strong from that point on. Like, there's no shaky, there's no question, like, what if? It's, like, from that point on, you know, okay, their relationship's good.
Which is, yeah, again, why I'm glad that deleted scene never made it in. Like,
right, yeah.
It would have been hanging over this little...
And that takes us into The Hungry Earth and Cold Blood, where we meet the Homo reptilians.
Yeah, good idea for a thing. I like that. That they're, like...
Yeah, and I liked how they're not villains, but they're not exactly good. You know, it's they're on the doctor's side, but you can never really completely trust them. You know,
right.
It's I like that dynamic where instead of just saying, "Oh, lizard people, we're going to make them bad guys," it's there's a little bit of an interest there.
Yeah.
And then this is the first, well, I guess technically he died in Amy's Choice, so this is the second time that Rory dies, you know, out of, like, 18.
Yeah. this is the sad one, though, where he never existed, and Amy forgets about him. Which, again, going back to, there's so much when you these series really merit a rewatching, when you just see the references to each other and stuff, and how... the doctor telling her not to forget, and then this is where Rory, you know, she forgets him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's... but yet the doctor remembers Ish. Like, they never say how much exactly he remembers. So it's always kind of a... You know he remembers him, but you don't know how much of it he remembers. So, I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But that takes us into Vincent and the Doctor.
Yes, one of my favorite episodes, one of the most emotional, like, again, another standalone, maybe it's not pushing the story forward too much either, but again, just so much character stuff.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the guy that they got to play Vincent Van Gogh was, or Vincent Van Gogh, I don't, you know. The way they said that just bothered me. But, yeah, he was brilliant, and the scene where I mean, obviously everyone knows the scene at the end with him in the museum is just heart-wrenching. It is so emotional, but it's fantastic.
I think I saw that actor on True Blood. I literally started to tear up while watching True Blood. Boardwalk Empire. And I was like, oh my god, Vincent! Like, and he, you know, he's not in any kind of sad scene or anything.
Yeah, he's pulling out a baseball bat and going to town on somebody, and I'm just sobbing like a baby.
Yeah. Such was the power of this episode.
Yeah. There's a lot of times you'll see that image of Vincent with the tear in his eye, a still frame on the internet or something, and you know, you've got to fight back the tears yourself.
Yeah.
You know, because it sticks with you. It really does. But then we get the lodger and we meet Craig. This was a great episode. Just, you know, a standalone, a one-time companion, and you know, it was just great seeing how someone else reacted to the doctor just all of a sudden showing up.
Yes.
And then trying to see the doctor live, you know, everyday life as a normal person living in a flat, you know.
Yeah, and he's good at football, and he comes with – everyone loves him.
And that actually I found out that Matt Smith actually, when he was younger, never wanted to be an actor. He wanted to be a pro footballer and played on a lot of teams when he was in his teens until he had a back injury and he couldn't play anymore. And that's when someone got him interested in theater. So for them to bring soccer into this, I think was more Matt Smith than anything.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. I mean, he definitely looks like he's having a great time. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Right. And then that leads us into the Pandorica opens in the Big Bang. And the one and only appearance of the Fez.
They said they had to kill that off right away or else Matt Smith would have wanted to wear it forever.
Exactly. It was great. It was very interesting. I mean, these episodes went in a way that I never would have expected. You know, the whole Pandorica opens, you're thinking there's some massive, you know, bad guy in this thing. And, you know, you think back on everything that he's faced, you know, the Daleks, the Cybermen, the Weeping Angels, Satan himself, you know, there's all these creatures, but this one is supposed to be far worse than anything that he's faced so far. And so, you know, you're just sitting there the whole time like, oh my God, this is going to be awesome. You know, and then to find out that it's a prison built for him, you're like, oh,
I saw it coming. I think whenever there's something where they're like, this question that has no answer, like, the answer is always him. Like, it's always, you know?
Yeah. I will say one thing I liked in this episode was his speech on top of Stonehenge. You know, when he's standing there just talking to all the spaceships. Yeah. And I mean, that was the epic I am the Doctor moment of the series. You know, it was when he's just going nuts and what was the one line he had? I can't even remember it now. I'm just going completely blank. He's on top of Stonehenge screaming at him. You know, he's like, when you come down to get this thing, you just remember one thing. I'm the one that's in your way. And think about all the black days that I've stopped you before. And, I mean, it was such a great, you know, great moment where he's just, you know, that he was the Doctor incarnate at that point, you know?
Yeah. And this is like the happier version of David Tennant's dark Doctor Victorious that kind of emerges, you know. This is it. Like, and is it as anything? Something like, you lot whizzing by, like, you know, he gets mad at them for flying
around. I am talking. Yeah. Oh, it was great.
And this is also with these are kind of confusing episodes, but they do, when you rewatch it, it does make sense. Like, the whole thing with Rory being a Roman and a plastic person, and he should, like, It actually does make sense upon the rewatch, I think.
Yeah, this is definitely something you have to go back and rewatch. You have to give it more than just the initial thing and say, oh, okay, I don't get it now. You know, but it's, yeah, there's a lot to get out of this. Okay, so that takes us into the, oh, sorry, I'm having trouble lately. That takes us into the Christmas special, the Christmas Carol.
Yes. I mean, apart from having Amy and Rory in it, like, another Christmas episode to me.
Yeah, I think this one was great in, I mean, one, you've got, you know, you've got Michael Gambon as Scrooge for all intents and purposes. You know, you've got, you know, Dumbledore guest starring. It was awesome. And then, you know, I love the take that they took on this where he's not, you know, he's not selfish and hoarding money. He's selfish and holding the last day with the woman that he loves.
Yeah.
I
remember seeing this actress somewhere else, the woman that he loves, Catherine Jenkins. Oh, she's famous. Never mind. Okay.
Well, that works. Yeah. But, and then we're off on to season 6, or series 6.
Series 6 with The Impossible Astronaut and Day of the Moon.
Yeah, this, I mean, I find this incredibly fitting now with... You know,
oh,
with
God,
Neil,
yes.
Armstrong just passing, you know, that I loved when it happened, when I heard about Neil Armstrong, one of the first things I saw pop up was a still image of the doctor sitting next to the TV with that video going. And he's saying, every human throughout all time will look back on this video and remember these words. You know, and it was such a great testament to Neil Armstrong and to the accomplishment that he made. And I love the fact that it was a Doctor Who quote that captured that.
Oh my God. I saw that picture too. And same thing, like, again, with the passing of Neil Armstrong, it didn't hit me emotionally because, you know, I'm too young to remember when this happened, obviously, or it, like, my mom was too young to remember when this happened, but like didn't hit me emotionally until I saw that, and of course that was the first thing I thought of the movie and of, like, the silence.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this whole thing is what sparked a new wave of terrors for Whovians across the world. You know, is there something behind me that I just can't remember because I'm not looking at it? You know, it's another one of those classic villains that Stephen Moffat seems to be able to come up with.
Yeah, I get, like, he tops himself over and over, and it's something where they're now, like, a classic part of the Who repertoire, like, the silence, like, and it, you know, that's incredibly ambitious, like, an incredible thing. There was a t-shirt on T-Fury, and they should start sponsoring us, because I'm going to keep mentioning it. there was a shirt a few days ago of the famous painting, The Scream, but it was one of the silence.
Right, yeah.
They're now, like, a cultural thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you see somebody with a Sharpie mark on their arm, and you start to panic, you know? They missed the cap when they were trying to put it in the pen, and, you know, all of a sudden now you're terrified, you know? it's great.
When I went to Comic-Con in New York last year, anyone who, like, didn't have a costume, wasn't cosplaying, like, that was, like, a cheap thing that a lot of people did. It was just tally
yeah.
marks over their arms.
Yeah. But, yeah, that leads us into the Curse of the Black Spot, the pirate episode. This was great.
Yeah, that's Lily Cole, a famous model, plays the stroppy mermaid, as he calls her.
Yes. I love the twist that they took on this. You know, you've got the mermaid, the whole mythos of the black spot that comes along with pirate lore, you know, all of this stuff, and it's put into, you know, one of those twists that just you don't see coming. You're like, oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah.
And it's a twist that enables Rory to show his nursing expertise.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. After that was the doctor's wife. I would say probably the best episode of Series 6.
Yeah. I agree. This was the Neil Gaiman penned episode. I didn't think at the time that it was my favorite episode, but I think possibly of these last two series, that's my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, just going back and watching it again, there's, again, I mean, with all of these episodes, there's so much to get out of it. And having just watched it again, there's just so much fantastic, the exchange between the Doctor and Idris through the whole episode is great. And, you get to see the horrible stuff in AB's head as the TARDIS or the fake TARDIS is messing with her. Just the whole thing between the Doctor and Idris, and then Amy and Rory being stuck on the TARDIS, all that stuff meshing together is just, it makes for an incredibly memorable episode.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff is, I think, kind of a precursor to The Girl Who Waited, exploring those kind of themes of mm-hmm. they just wait till each other till they die.
Yeah. I wish that they could bring Idris back. I mean, at the same time, I'm glad they can't. I'm glad that they wrote it in towards the end where, it's like, no, I can't make her talk. We've tried. It's a very bad idea, So,
right.
Because I don't want to see her come back, but at the same time, it's hard to let go,
Well, what I really, appreciate about this is that, because this was a one-off spot, this could have gone horribly wrong, and, the actors might not have had chemistry and stuff, and instead this, Matt Smith and the actress, whose name I don't know, they pulled off the Doctor and the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
This is an alien and a blue box and their relationship. And you have, so many minutes to have conversations to define their relationship, this madman and his box.
Yeah.
And they did, they pulled it off. The acting and the chemistry was just, crazy.
Yeah, it was fantastic. That takes us into The Rebel Flesh and The Almost People. This was a disturbing set of episodes. The idea of there's a copy of you that you're supposed to be able to control and all of a sudden it comes to life. What is that going to do? What kind of person is it going to be? Is it going to be a person? And obviously this sets up the whole, the idea of the flesh copies that, that we find out later on Amy has been pretty much the whole time.
Right. It makes all the things with her, when the Doctor's scanning her, it all starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't, at the time watching it, you didn't get that. I didn't think that they were setting up for anything. I just thought this was a weird episode where they're exploring this concept of would it be human or not?
Yeah. And that's why I like it so much is because it doesn't say, hey, here's the idea I'm having, this is going to go out through it. It's just kind of like, okay, I'm interested in this, and they've tied it in. Oh my God, I like how they can do that.
For my birthday this year, my boyfriend got me, and now I am in my 20s, an official Doctor Who Rebel Flesh, toy thing. Let me see what it's called. The flesh bowl figure creator. It's you make the flesh and then you put this thing in and you make a ganger of the Doctor and it's this gooey flesh stuff. It's really cool. It's squishy. On my birthday this year, instead of going to a bar and getting drunk or something, I was making little gangers of the Doctor.
That is awesome. Oh man, that's cool. Yeah, but then we go to A Good Man Goes to War, which is where we find out who River Song really is. We see that Amy is pregnant, has the baby, the baby's taken away from her, and grows up to become River.
Yeah, this is, season finale material. stuff. Like, these were some really good episodes. And really good, like you said, like, one question is answered, five more are raised. A lot of things were answered in this episode.
I think this series. The part that bothered me is, okay, the Madame Kavarian got away with the baby. All right. The doctor's going to go after her with a vengeance. You know, then we find out that River was actually the baby. And there's that realization you have there, like, they're not going to get her back.
Yeah, they don't even care, though, at that point. They're like, well, we're not going to get her back, so we might as well not even try.
I'm sitting there like, oh, man. You know, I mean, as a parent, that got to me. I was like, oh, that's brutal. You know, but, you know, obviously she turns out okay. She's alive. She's, you know, done well for herself. But it was still brutal for me watching that.
Yeah.
But then we see Let's Kill Hitler. And we see Melody regenerate into River.
I like how they did this. And I love, again, like, if you see the different regenerations of the Doctor, you see him psychologically kind of mature. Like, with River, like, you know, it's all compressed into one episode, so it's hilarious. Like, how, you know, she goes from Melody to River. Like, she says she's concentrating on a dress size as she regenerates. Like, and the way they kind of, like, shoehorn Melody into Rory and Amy's life, like, but it didn't feel too jarring, like, because they always do these kind of things where, like, oh, you never knew this about Amy, but, like, you know, here this is. Like, so the way that it was put in there, it actually worked. And when she turned out to be River's Song, which is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there were a couple things that I didn't like about this episode. You know, one being that, you know, the Doctor was able to break the brainwashing and cure River of her psychosis simply by, you know, saying one phrase, you know, saying that he forgives her or something, or I can't even remember what it is now.
I forget too.
Yeah, but just that one phrase all of a sudden and she's magically cured. It was like, that's a bit of a stretch for me, you know. And then the part where River flies the TARDIS because she's a child of the TARDIS. You know, she was conceived in the TARDIS, so now all of a sudden she inherently knows how to fly it. I'm like, I don't know about that.
That always bothered me because she said she learned from there's a previous episode where she says, I learned from the best, and then the Doctor kind of preens, and she's like, you were busy that day.
Yeah.
So, like, I wish I didn't. You know, you're kind of retconning that and saying, oh, no, she knows the TARDIS because she's...
Well, I guess technically that would be, you know, learning from the best, but...
I guess.
Yeah, but it's definitely one that, you know, I don't know. I did like her line when she jumps out of the window and sees all the Nazi soldiers, and she's like, well, I was on my way to my, you know, my gay gypsy bar mitzvah and decided, you know what, the Third Reich's a bit rubbish. Let's take care of that. I thought that was great. Just, you know, a jab at the Nazi party.
Yeah, classic River Song. And especially, I remember when this episode, before it came out, we had, like, you know, little snippets, spoiler kind of teasers were released. And it made it like it was like a whole Hitler episode. And this was kind of, I think, one of the lines that they threw out. So, like, I had a really weird impression of this episode before it came out because of things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love how it's, you know, that it's Let's Kill Hitler, and it's supposed to be all about Hitler, and they shove him into the cupboard in the first couple minutes. Yeah. It's like, and we're never going to talk about him again.
Here's worth mentioning. This is where Rory says that he has a headache, and this is why people think that he's an incarnation of the Master.
Right. As soon as River regenerates, he starts complaining about a pounding in his head. Yeah, and so that's one of the big things. I'm like, okay, that may have triggered something. I can start to understand where that theory comes from. I think it's complete crap. I don't think it's going to happen, but I can understand the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
But anyway, that takes us into Night Terrors. And this was one of those creepy episodes. Not necessarily scary or freaky, just kind of, you know, creepy.
It reminded me of, did you watch Are You Afraid of the Dark back in the day? This reminded me of an episode from there where, like, the girl gets sucked into a dollhouse and becomes a doll.
I didn't see that one, but yeah, it's...
Yeah, so it was scary to me only because it was like evoking that kind of.
That's the thing. Is the whole time you're just kind of like, this is real creepy, and then, you know, as soon as Amy gets touched and turned into a doll, you're like, oh, okay, everything's gonna be fine. You know,
so, yeah.
Nothing bad can happen now.
It did make for some funny lines with Amy and Rory. I forget now, but it, something about it really made me laugh.
Oh yeah, there were a couple lines that Rory made about, you know, like I think that at one point they were in a kitchen and he made some kind of comment about that or something. And so yeah, obviously not overly memorable, but
yeah, clearly we love this stuff.
Yeah, and then after that we get the girl who waited. This, I think this was a good episode. This was a very good episode. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is like them pushing, like, they bring up all these, like, really heavy points with the show, and it's usually either resolved by the deus ex machina of the doctor figuring something out that the audience never would have known or whatever,
right,
or it's just left unresolved. This was something where they just took it to the most extreme conclusion where, like, it was just like, this is, it, like, it was set, like, you know, like, it, things have tragic endings, like, and so this is like, you know, if the doctor doesn't come to the rescue in time, this is a tragic ending.
I was bothered by the fact that, you know, Rory, when he was a Roman, waited 2,000 years, and you never hear him say anything about it. Amy waits 46 and loses her mind. You know, she's got a chip on her shoulder. She's pissed off as all hell. And I'm like, you know, you waited, you know, a fraction of the time that he did.
I've heard people say that before, but you never know that maybe after Rory waited 46 years, he wasn't pissed too.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I guess the difference was that, you know, Rory knew the Pandora was going to open. He knew he was going to have to wait a long time, but it was going to happen. Amy knew that the doctor and Rory left. That was it. You know, she didn't know that they were going to get back in time. She didn't know, you know, anything except for the fact that they were no longer there. So it's, I can kind of understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Rory, I think, through this whole episode, does the right thing. Like, he's trying to do right by Amy, no matter which version of her it is.
Yeah. And I did kind of like at the end where, you know, he has to make the choice. He's like, which Amy do you want? You know, it was kind of funny where, you know, they had to, where they were playing on the idea of what would you do if you had two of them? Yeah, it was kind of interesting. And then at the very end, it's like, no, you can't have both. You have to pick which one. And the exchange between Rory and old Amy through the TARDIS door was another one of those emotional points that just, you can't help but get all choked up.
Yeah.
But then we find the God Complex. This was an interesting episode. I mean, it was very, very weird.
It was more of a psychological episode than we've seen lately. Definitely, again, has that kind of, like, Are You Afraid of the Dark, creepy clown, like, actually, this reminds me again of a specific Are You Afraid of the Dark episode where they were stealing people's fears, and I think they were making them into soup, which did not happen in this episode. But, again, like you said, like, it's like a weird episode because it's so personal for each person, you know, so.
Now, I think it was kind of interesting that, you know, Amy goes into one room and sees, you know, the Weeping Angel and assumes that that's for her.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, I can't remember what kind of alien he was, but he says, no, that was mine. You know, if that was mine and you're so scared of it, what's yours going to be? You know, and right, now that we've found out, you know, what's coming for Amy, I can't help but wonder how that's going to play into it. You know, what effect that's going to have, or how that's, you know, I don't even know what I'm trying to say here. It's like, I know it's going to be important to that somehow.
Right, and also the things that, like, where he tells her to forget him and stuff, I think that, yeah, it helped in this episode, but it's going to be important later on, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was the interesting thing, was at the end he realized, you know, them being with me, Amy and Rory being with me, is far more dangerous than anything else could be. So, you know, he puts the, you know, gets him a house and a car and all that stuff and says, okay, here's your home, get out. You know, I don't want to do this to you anymore. So that takes us into closing time, where the doctor is struggling with putting people in danger. He wants to realize, or he wants to know, that he can have a normal relationship with someone without causing all these problems.
Okay, wait. So I just have to delve into kind of the space between these two episodes, because I don't get it. At the end of the God Complex, he drops them off, and that's that, or whatever. And then in closing time, Amy is like a model, or has a perfume out, and like is famous or something. Like,
yeah.
But then there's like they literally say in the episode that it's 2010, and that like that it's, you know, so like it hasn't been like years since he dropped them off in the God Complex. Like we've kept like a fairly steady timeline here. You know what I mean? Like
it could be that when he dropped them off at the end of the God Complex, he took them back too shortly after their wedding, which would have been 2008, I think, or no, I don't remember, but you know, it could have been that he just said, okay, all that time that we were away, you know, is gone now. You're back the very next day or a week later or something. So there could have been time there. It's, you know.
Okay, yeah, they don't say when he dropped them off.
Yeah,
that's true.
Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, this has been bothering me for months now.
Yeah, it's one of those things you just kind of have to hand wave, you know.
Yeah.
I like this episode. I mean, you can't go wrong with Craig, and you know, bringing in Stormageddon was fantastic. You know, I love Matt Smith's lines after or while he's talking to the baby. You know, just because he does it in such a great way, where you know what the baby has said. Yeah. He doesn't repeat it to you, but you know what the baby has said. And it's some of the. It's weird to say, but that was some of the funniest dialogue in the whole episode.
Yeah, this is why Matt Smith is so amazing.
Yeah. No, you can't call him not mum.
it's mum, not mum, and peasants.
Yeah, it's like, not mum, that's you. Also not mum, that's me. And everyone else is peasants. Oh, that's not good. Yeah, I was bothered at the end how Craig defeats the Cybermen with love.
Oh, I know, I like that.
It was very, I don't know, I mean, I like how it fit into the whole concept of him as a father and learning to be a father, but at the same time, it was like, really? I mean, these robots that have this figured out, you know, they know how to strip you of emotion. And yet, because you love your son, you can make them blow up. It's
I like that they just acknowledge how silly it is, though. That the doctor tries to start explaining, and then he's like, yeah, love.
Yeah, that did kind of make it a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, this is one of those episodes that I'm very on the fence about. You know, it's like, I want to love it. I really do. But there's some things that are just like, it's not quite there for me. But.
Yeah, I like this episode, though.
Yeah. But that takes us into the Wedding of River Song, when we see the culmination of the doctor being shot and, you know, how that all plays out. The alternate timeline, or the failure of time, I guess, or, you know, where we start to see what happens if you change a fixed point in time.
Yeah, again, this is something that they're always going back to, and he's always changing, seemingly, fixed points in time. So, I mean...
My question is, what makes a point in time fixed? Like, what is it? Is it the people involved? Is it the event? It's like, what makes this a fixed point in time, but, you know, other times not? You know,
it's a good question.
It's one of those questions that makes you not want to think too much about the show, otherwise it'll ruin the enjoyment.
Yeah.
But I do like how this all played out. I mean, it was a very interesting episode visually, and a lot of stuff got tied together.
Yeah, we go back to getting the closure from the Impossible Astronaut.
Mm-hmm. I was kind of disappointed with how they resolved that. It's like, you know, you at the beginning of the series, you see the Doctor get killed, and it's built up through the entire year. And you finally get to the point, it's going to be resolved, and, oh, he used a body double. It's like, it was, I don't know what they could have done to make it a fitting end, but that just seemed like a letdown to me. It's like, you could have told me that back in April, and I would have been okay with it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, it's taught me not to trust Stephen Moffat. Like, if they say the Doctor's going to die, no, like... Clearly, they're not going to really.
Well, I mean, obviously, he wasn't going to die, but it was, you know, I wanted a better explanation than, oh, he had a robot that looked like him get shot, you know.
But it did bring the whole Tessalecta thing to, like, you know, you finally figure out where they were going with that. So it was internally consistent, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, but then we get to the very end, where the Doctor has his exchange with Dorian, and it sets up where the where the next series should be going. We'll see if that actually does, but you know, they have their exchange. They're talking about the prophecy. At one point, Dorian says, but you're a fool nonetheless. It's all still waiting for you. The Fields of Trenzalore, the Fall of the 11th, and the question. You know, the first question. The question that must never be answered, hidden in plain sight. The question you've been running from all your life. Doctor Who. Doctor Who. Doctor Who. So.
Good line.
It definitely sets a tone for what to expect.
I hope that they do address this, though, and not, like, I mean, the whole thing was, like, silence will fall when the question is asked. Well, he shouted three times the question. Like, you know, what specifically, are they ever going to address what they mean by that? Or is it not, like, you know what I mean? Like, and, again, whenever there's something, like, who's... You know, they're building up to it. Always ends up being the Doctor, and so when they're building up to this question, of course the question is Doctor Who.
Yeah. The prophecy being, you know, that silence will fall or silence must fall, as they say, when the question is asked at the Fall of the 11th, which I always assumed was going to be the, you know, the end of Matt Smith, you know, that they were going to kill off the 11th, that was going to be the death of the 11th.
Right.
But obviously that's not going to be the case now, so I'm interested in seeing what this means. You know, is it, you know, his failure? Is it, you know, what does the Fall of the 11th mean? You know, because, I mean, obviously they could go something completely different, make it the 11th something else.
Right.
But yeah, I don't see that happening.
Again, this is one of those things where, like you know, it has to be talking about him, the 11th, but they could go a completely different direction. And I really hope that these kind of things are addressed in the next series, because I know we're kind of done with some storylines and it's moving on, but you know, this all seemed pretty important.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I don't know. I'm hoping it's not like the TARDIS exploding thing, where it's just kind of like, oh yeah, it happened. We're not going to tell you anything about it. You know, it's
right.
I don't see them. I mean, this is such a big thing that, and so dominant in this episode, that I don't see them just sweeping it under the rug and hoping people forget. So we will see what happens in just a couple days. Yay! But yeah, that brings us up to speed.
Yes. Oh, except there was a Christmas episode,
oh, yes.
But again, it was just a standalone kind of Christmas.
Yeah, the only thing that would really carry over is the fact that, you know, the Doctor went back to Amy and Rory and, you know, to tell them that he was alive, which River had already spilled the beans on, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like you said, it was a Christmas episode kind of throwaway, so. But yeah, so now we are 2 days away from the next series. I'm so excited.
Oh, man. A friend of mine is having a birthday party, and I'm not going. I'm staying at home and watching this. So excited.
If they were Whovian, then, you know, they wouldn't be having their party on that day. And since they're not, then obviously they're not a good friend.
Yeah, exactly. Or they would make their party just, let's all watch this quietly and discuss it afterward.
Well, do we have anything else in closing?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground.
Well, I am really excited to talk about Asylum of the Daleks next week. I can't wait to see this. Stephen Moffat has said that every episode this year is going to be a blockbuster. And I'm hoping that he lives up to that promise. And it looks like he might, from what I've seen so far.
Yeah, it looks incredibly cinematic, and I can't believe the next time we talk it's going to be about a full, new content, a full hour long,
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited. Well, on that note, we will go ahead and wrap it up, and we will see you guys on the other side of the series premiere.
Alright, we will see you then. Have a great night.
Thanks for joining us for Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week on iTunes or at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. Something you want to hear about or wish that we do differently? Leave us a comment on iTunes or send us an email at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com or on Twitter @gallifreyradio. You can also find our hosts on Twitter @model_Melissa or @scopehound. Music by Dan Doodly Doo and Kodoks.